Will you pray with me? Gracious and loving God, God of the head, the heart, our wildest dreams and deepest imaginations, be with us in this time as we discern what work you might call us toward on this day and in the days ahead. In our time this morning, may we open our hearts. May you illumine us. May the words of my mouth and meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So I was hiking with a friend yesterday, and along the way we were just talking about some of our future plans. And this friend knows he wants to go to grad school. He doesn't quite know where yet. He's confident of his program. And the whole time that we're walking and talking, he just keeps kind of harping on these main points about, I should apply to a school around where I want to live, and how much money I want to spend for cost of living, and how close my family and friends might be. And he just keeps going on and on and on about these three big parts of this decision that he kind of has to make at some point, but not yet, because applications haven't opened and he doesn't make a decision until April. But it's all there in his head right now. And he says, Thomas, if you were in my position, what would you choose to do? You've done grad school before. And I said, I would never make a decision the way that you're trying to make this decision right now. Because all the things that you've shared with me are all what's happening up here in your head. What I have yet to hear is why you feel called to do this program. What about this thing makes your heart sing? What about this illustrates some sort of passion that you might have? So, all I've heard is what's in your head. I know nothing about your heart. I would never make a decision the way you're trying to make this decision right now. He was a little confused because he's not used to the pastoral version of me. And so I just asked, what are you feeling right now? After you've said all this and I've replied, what's happening? And he said, well, I guess I feel a little anxious and a little stressed. I said, I think that makes sense because you're all up here. I think you should spend a little bit more time thinking about what might be coming from here. Why do you feel called to pursue law school? Why do you currently work for public defender? What's happening in that space where you think that maybe there's something else you should be doing in the world? If you give that space time to really live out what's happening and then connect what's happening here with what you're thinking about here, it might be a heck of a lot easier to plan out your next steps. I share that story with you, one, because it literally happened yesterday and I thought about it on my way here this morning, but two, because I think it helps illustrate a bit of what I think and what I felt in our text this morning. Where I felt most drawn for us today is to talk about the Pharisees. I think we talk about the Pharisees an awful lot in this faith, and it's borderline obsession. And it's weird to me because Mark writes as though we should hate the Pharisees. Most of our teaching suggests that we should dislike the Pharisees, but I think we secretly love them. I think that what Mark and many Christians don't want to admit is that the Pharisees have actually helped us, and they've helped our faith too. I think that what far too few of us are willing to admit is that we actually want much of what the Pharisees often offered. Rules and regular order, consistency and routine, a clear list of how to live this life, do this, but don't eat that, eat this meal, but avoid that meat, pray in this way, feast on that day, wash your hands, sit, stand, kneel, sing. If you're sitting here and you're thinking, wow, that might be me, but I'm scared to admit it, that's okay. I'll admit it first. My spiritual formation and community professor, an Episcopal priest, we were meeting in her office hours about 2.5 years ago. She said, Thomas, I was so surprised when I found out that you were in the UCC, because when you talk about how you think about worship, I could have sworn you were in the Episcopal Church. Pot kettle. The Jesuit priest who led my courses on Hinduism and comparative Christianity once said, I know you're not Catholic, but I feel like it's got to be in there somewhere, right? So as you have perhaps learned in the past 2 years together, my professors knew this too, I like and appreciate order. I am comfortable in settings where I can walk in, know what to expect, when to expect it, and also know that everyone else is on the same page. And if they're not on that page, there's something very easy for them to figure out how to get there. That if they're lost, they can easily find their way because we've told them what to expect and how to expect it. All that said, I think that one would be wrong to suggest that those spaces that I've described or that people like me are all head and no heart. Conversely, I think you'd be wrong to suggest that spaces that lack that kind of order, that kind of routine, that sense of do this and not that, are all heart and no head. Indeed, I pay attention to what the order of things is because that structure allows me to then live more freely in a space where I can be spontaneous. There are others who might say that if you do that, you block out efforts to spontaneity. That could be true. In our text this morning, when Jesus encounters the Pharisees and he asks this question, why are your followers not washing their hands? Christ's response is not, never wash your hands again. Instead, he is simply working to interrogate the rationale for what appears to be a rather dogged commitment to that tradition and expectation in the first place. Are the Pharisees washing their hands to check off a box? Are they washing their hands out of deference to a societal expectation for how people think that people like them should act or move in the world? Is this simply something they're doing because they've been taught to do it, so they simply do it? Or are they washing their hands because that act of hand washing is a movement in tandem with the intention of the heart to offer gratitude for God for receiving one's daily bread? Because historically, the washing of one's hands was an effort to acknowledge the purity of God. You did this when you entered the temple. The parts of Matthew we didn't read today go to great lengths to explain all the steps of hand washing. Similar to what you may have seen when COVID first hit this country and we saw posters that suddenly had to tell us how to wash our hands. There's a reason, a practice, a science behind it. I think that what's happening here is the heart of the disciples' decision to not wash their hands. In this moment, they don't feel the need to wash their hands as an outward display of commitment to tradition or the law solely for the sake of doing so, because their hearts are already engaged in that tradition. Their intention in eating this food is to honor and glorify God. So they don't have to wash their hands this time because their heart is already there, and they understand why the washing of hands is important. Perhaps, too, the disciples already knew what Christ was going to teach the Pharisees. And that's that they and others in society were perhaps so caught up in the appearance of tradition, so caught up in the illustration of their faith, that their actions were no longer committed to their heart. The head said, this is good. The heart didn't quite know what was going on. They wanted their adherence to customs and faith, teachings to look the part, but their hearts just weren't really in it. That reality is how we get the term hypocrite that we heard in our text this morning. I think that translation is rarely perfect, and that's certainly the case here. Hypocrite, as we know it, I think is a bit more aggressive, more potent than what Jesus was really trying to say. When Jesus used a version of this word, he was simply calling someone out for doing half of a job. Something you might feel if you went to a concert and the performer came out and just lip-synced the entire thing. You'd feel kind of cheated because they came out, they were dressed up, all the lights and sounds were there, but they just sung alongside a track the whole time. Something is missing. The head was there, the heart was not. In our story today, the Pharisees and others were washing their hands, but they weren't really cleaning themselves. They were saying, look, I'm faithful. But their heart wasn't there. Their heart really didn't desire that kind of work. I think it matters that we talk about this as a community of faith, as individuals, as folks, particularly in a congregational tradition, where so much of what we do is guided by individuals who come together once or twice a year to make really big decisions. The head alone, I think, can lead us oftentimes to correct and good action, but without any of the passion and zeal for life that might be required to make that action feel more real. The heart alone, I think, can lead us down paths that may be much more difficult and lonely than they might otherwise be without the head being involved. What we might hope for, I think, is an interdependency of the heart and the head, such that they inform one another and move in tandem together. Our intention and thoughts moving in such a way that we feel inspired to use our hands and feet to bring more fully to bear that which we have been called to create. Over the past few months, Reverend Liz and our moderator, Denise, have posed big questions for all of us. What makes our hearts sing? What are our passions? And what is our deep hope or vision for this community of faith? I will be vulnerable here and tell you that I've been a bit frustrated by what I've heard in response to those questions, because I think we've been really caught up in the how of what's happening in this space, and much less focused on the why that hits at the questions they've been asking us. We've been real concerned by where the passing of the peace happens in the order of service, less concerned by what we're actually trying to do when we want to pass the peace. The head says we should do this. The heart says my intention is to greet my neighbors and say, I'm glad you're here. So how do we marry those two things together such that we're no longer sitting in a room for an hour and a half or 2 hours saying, where does this go in the order of service? How do most people feel good about where we put this? And instead say, if we feel called and moved to greet our neighbors in the name of Christ, then what actions might we need to take to make that more real, not just for us here, but for those who aren't here, for the folks online, for the folks across the street, for the folks who live just too far away from churches like our own? If the heart leads us to do these big things, perhaps our head and our context might come together and say, the order of service doesn't really matter all that much. What really matters is our intention behind what we're doing. We can create structure around what happens here, but if our faith stays contained here, if our energies stay focused here, we have lost the big picture that Christ and God calls us towards. So what might it mean for us to spend some intentional time sitting and reflecting on how we might marry the head and the heart together as one, finding that delicate balance within ourselves for ourselves in a way that might better serve all of us? So when we ask these big questions, what makes your heart sing? What is your passion? Where does your passion lie? And what is your deep hope and vision for this particular community of faith right now in this time, but also in the time to come, that perhaps we might be more ready to answer those questions, to be a part of that bigger team, because as we heard in our story for all ages, we've taken some time to practice. We've taken time to sit with the tools we've been offered to make this life a bit easier to live. And sure, perhaps we're still fussed about where things happen in the order of service. I think that does make sense. It's going to happen in any space. But perhaps, too, we're asked a follow-up question. If I put the passing the peace at the beginning or the end, what is made more possible or less possible by that decision? If the intention is to greet one another, what is made more possible or more real by where it happens to fall within the service? If we're called to live this life in community with one another, to journey along in faith alongside each other, sharing joy and sorrow, happiness and lament, how do we make that more real by tying together not just what happens here, but also what we think and what we know that's happening here? How do those two things together make this life have more meaning for all of us? How does any of this together help us build a more just world for all? I have no clear answer for you on that. That is indeed homework for each of us, because I think this is an unending practice, an unending process. There will never be a moment where you can sit down and say, I've got it. This is the way. There will always be a shifting of the sands, a shifting and rebalancing act that has to take place, because every context is indeed different. Every moment's a new moment to sit down and think intentionally, what's happening here and here, and how do those influence what I will do next? I think it matters for all of us in this space and in others that we occupy to spend that time to consider how we might live out this life in a way that has us move interdependently to make more beautiful the things that God has called us to create. And so my prayer for you this day, I always have at least one, is that you might take that time to sit in stillness in the splendor of God's great creation and think about how your head and your heart come together as one. Think about how those two things moving together inspire you to get up and use your hands and feet to make beautiful things happen in our midst. My prayer for you is that you will not just focus on the head nor the heart, but you will find the great beauty that sings when those two things come together. And my deeper prayer is that once you've found that balance, you will bring that newfound gift, talent, skill back to this place and help all of us get to work to answer those three big questions. What makes your heart sing? Where does your passion lie? And what is your deep and fervent hope for the future of this community of faith? May these prayers be so. Amen.